There is nothing wrong with your radio. Do not attempt to change the station. We are controlling the transmission. We control the volume.
We can change the tone to a fuzzy bass,
or focus it to a tinny treble.
We can speed things up so fast you can hardly understand what's being said.
Or we can make things so slow you don't care.
We control the content. We can make it boring.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive. It's our show. We can do anything we want, because this is
Mystery Playhouse. 90.1.
Good evening, and welcome to the Mystery Playhouse. I am the Count, your host of horror.
Come in.
I was just up in the attic and I thought I'd sort through some of my old remains. I mean relics, huh?
Yes,
they're mementos from my youth. Oh, looky here. Here's my old baby crap, huh?
Cute, isn't it, huh?
Yes, my folks went all out. Solid brass handles, maple wood exterior, red velvet interior. It is everything but the mirror, huh?
Yes.
You can always distinguish the children's coffins from the adult ones, because the childproof ones don't open from the inside, huh? I think I hear my childhood pal in the background, old Spot. Oh, and here's my old Jack in the box. I already buried Jill in her box, huh?
Oh, yes. Really.
And here's my ancient baby rattler. My father killed it because it bit him too often, huh?
Yes.
Then he hit me because I called him a hypocrite, huh?
Oh, tell me about it.
But he was. No. You know, actually, he only hit me on one other occasion. For when I buried all my friends in the sandbox, huh?
Yeah, that's what they said.
Oh, and here's the first dollar I ever earned. I got it from the Fang Fairy, huh?
Yes.
Let me tell you, you know, it all kind of reminds me of an expression from my great-great-grandclaw, huh?
Yes.
You know, he would always let out a sigh and then exclaim, "What a death. Those were the good old nights, huh?"
Yes.
And now we're going to give you something in which you'll remember, even when your hair is white. Because it's so scary, we'll turn it white tonight, huh? Yes. It's the Weird Circle's Heart of Ethan Brand, an escaped bloodbath. But first, it's the Chateau Inn. Leopard strikes on Mystery Playhouse, so scary!
The thrilling adventures of the Shadow are on the air. Brought to you each week by the Blue Coal Dealers of America. These dramatizations are designed to demonstrate forcibly to old and young alike that crime does not pay. The Shadow will be with us in just a moment. But first, here's an important tip that will add to the enjoyment of your home. When ordering fuel, be sure to ask for Blue Coal. You'll enjoy greater heating comfort at less cost. What's more, the extra convenience of a steady-burning, longer-lasting blue coal fire will give you more leisure time. More time to enjoy a truly comfortable, well-heated home. Call your neighborhood blue coal dealer. You'll find him eager to please you with a prompt, clean delivery, plus free information about low-cost home heating. Phone him tomorrow, won't you? He'll show you the easy blue coal way to heat your home. The Shadow, mysterious character who aids the forces of law and order, is in reality Lamont Cranston, wealthy young man about town. As the Shadow, Cranston is gifted with hypnotic power to cloud men's minds so that they cannot see him. Cranston's friend and companion, the lovely Margot Lane, is the only person who knows to whom the voice of the invisible Shadow belongs. Today's story, The Leopard Strikes.
Officer Kelly.
Well, how are you, Max?
Fine. Had any excitement tonight?
Now, my young lad, what would be excitement on a beat like this around the animal house? Nothing's happened here in the park for 20 years.
Well, you can always hope.
Oh, yes, that you can.
What time have you got, Officer Kelly?
And it's almost midnight.
Well, if anything's to happen, this is the time. Midnight. Say, do those animals always howl like that?
Never a let up all night long. They just don't like being caged up in a zoo, I guess. You'll get used to them after a while.
I suppose so. You know, for my first assignment, I sort of hoped I'd get a more exciting place than this.
Well, the park is the home of the rookies and the has-beens, son. Barring promotions, you start here, move away, and end here.
Well, I hope I move away soon. Maybe you've noticed I sort of like action.
Well, if it's action you want, go in and wrestle with one of them wild beasts. Yeah, they're the only culprit you'll ever find here, Mac.
I guess you're right. Well, I suppose I'd better take one more turn around the beat.
Yes, yes, see that the squirrels and the spooners are behaving themselves. Well, see you later, son.
Okay, see you later.
Excitement. Ah, the rookies want excitement. It's those green kids that are pushing us old ones off the force. Well, maybe some of them will get more than they bargain for. Hey, what's that? Hey, Mac! Mac, what's the matter? Mac, what in the name of... Glory be. Magpie. What happened, son? Mac, your face. Ripped and cut. Mac, speak, son, speak.
At the head keeper's office at the zoo this afternoon, Margot. Commissioner Weston asked me to drop by.
Well, Lamont, why are they holding an inquiry? They know how he was killed.
I'm not so sure that they do.
What do you mean?
Well, when I spoke to the commissioner this morning, he told me that there was no evidence of any animal having escaped from the zoo last night.
Excuse me, but could I subject my opinion?
Of course, Shrevey. This is your cab.
What is your opinion, Shrevey?
Well, it is not exactly my opinion, hey. It is more the opinion of my friend and acquaintance, Big Charlie.
Oh, well, what is Big Charlie's opinion?
Well, he is making the observation, which is the same thing as an opinion, that this here now cop is not being killed by one of the animals from the zoo at all.
No?
No. He thinks it was done by a squirrel.
A squirrel?
Exactly, exactly. He says that them bushy-tailed beasts can be very mean when they're of a mind to be.
Oh, now, Shrevey, how could a squirrel kill a man?
Well, that's just what I asked Big Charlie.
And what did Big Charlie say?
Well, he just shows me a scar on his finger that was given to him by a squirrel. And he says that if a squirrel could do that to him, he could certainly kill anybody else.
Oh, Shrevey.
That's an excellent deduction. In fact, I'd like to hear more, Shrevey. But I think we've reached the zoo.
Reached the zoo, huh?
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah, yeah, so we have.
All right. Come on, Marco.
All right.
Do you want I should wait, hey?
Well, yes, you might as well, Shrevey.
Good. I'm going out and give a couple of squirrels to third degree.
What a man.
Oh, Lamont, are they holding this inquiry in one of the cages?
Well, if they are, they'll probably lock you up and throw away the key.
Oh.
We go right in here.
Oh, thanks. Oh, hello, Cranston. Come on in.
Well, thank you, Commissioner.
How are you, Margot?
Fine, thank you, Commissioner.
These are the two keepers that were on duty here at the zoo last night, Mr. Oliver and Mr. Harper.
How do you do?
Well, have you come up with anything yet, Commissioner?
Not a thing. The officer was killed by a wild animal, all right. But both these men here swear that none of them was loose last night.
Yes. Yes, that's right. They were all locked in.
Oh. Any clues at all?
Well, Harper here thinks that the job was done by some member of the cat family. Isn't that right?
Oh, yes, yes. After looking at the body, my guess would be that he was killed by a member of the cat family.
I see. Well, why do you say that?
Well, we get to know all the habits of the animals around here. We watch them eat and sleep. We practically live with them. My opinion is that it was a leopard.
Wait a minute. I don't agree.
Well, now, John, you know that...
Why don't you agree with him, Mr. Oliver?
Because that would put the blame on Reboo. She's the only leopard we've got here. Why, she wouldn't hurt nobody. She was in her cage all night, and you know that, Harper.
Now, wait a minute, John. I wasn't blaming Reboo. Of course I know she was in a cage. But there's more than one leopard in the world, you know.
Yeah, I know, and I also know you don't like Reboo. You're jealous because she only lets me feed her. She'll only obey
all right,
me.
Hold on, well, both of you. You can settle that later. I've got a tougher problem on my hands. There's a wild beast at large in this park, and we've got to find it.
Just how do you propose to do that, Commissioner?
Well, now, don't you worry. We'll find him, that's all. We'll set traps for him. Yeah, set traps. That's what we'll do.
That should be very effective, very. You'll probably catch everything in town but the leopard.
But in this weather, you might catch a cold in that trap.
Yes.
You're both a big help. If you don't mind, I'll conduct this thing my own way.
But, Commissioner, you asked me to come here.
Yes, I thought that your knowledge of wild animals that you picked up in Africa or wherever it was might be of use to me.
Well, I still offer that knowledge.
No, I don't need it.
Very well. I guess we better be going, Margot. Yeah.
All right, Lamont.
Good day, gentlemen.
Goodbye.
Good time.
Catch a cold.
Well, Margot, it might be wise if I took an active interest in this affair.
What do you mean, Lamont?
That argument between the two keepers interested me very much. I'd like to learn more about them.
Well, what are you going to do?
Well, this evening, late this evening, those two gentlemen are going to receive a visit from the Shadow.
Now, Reboo. Quiet, Reboo girl. Don't you behave like the others.
Now, look, Oliver. There are other animals in this house, you know. They need attention, too.
Reboo hasn't finished her dinner yet.
Well, can't she eat it without your help?
Leave me alone, Harper. I'll tend to the others when I'm done with Reboo.
I wonder if she knows that she's under suspicion of committing murder.
Now, listen, Harper, don't start that again.
Well, you heard what the police commissioner said.
Well, who put the idea in his head that a leopard done the killing? You did.
Well, he asked my opinion, didn't he?
Yes, and you tried to frame poor Reboo. That's what you done. What was that?
Which of you gentlemen is on the right side of this quarrel, may I ask?
Who was that? Who spoke to us?
I did, gentlemen.
Who are you?
Men call me the Shadow.
But where are you? I can't see you.
I'm standing right here beside you.
Where? Where?
Don't try to find me. By my hypnotic power, I've made myself invisible to your eyes.
What are you doing here? What do you want of us?
I'd like to learn just what you both know about the officer who was killed last night here in the park.
We don't know anything about it, except that he was killed by a wild animal.
Was that animal from this zoo?
I don't know.
Do you know what kind of an animal it was?
Why, it was a leopard, I guess.
No, he's wrong. It wasn't a leopard.
How do you know?
I don't know, except I know it wasn't Reboo here. And that's who Harper's trying to put the blame on.
Why should Mr. Harper do that?
Because he's scared of her, that's why. She hates him and he knows it. That's why he wants to get rid of her.
Oh, he doesn't know what he's saying. I'm not blaming this cat here. And I'm not afraid of her either.
Then why don't you go into her cage the way I do?
Just a minute. You're avoiding my questions, both of you. You're hiding something from me. Something that you know and refuse to tell. Isn't this true? Isn't it?
No.
Of course it isn't.
I don't believe either one of you. So let me warn you. I'm going to be watching you both. And if the leopard strikes again, You'll answer to the Shadow.
Read all about it. Mysterious leopard kills two more people in park. No clues found. Get your lady.
Lamont, we've been walking through this park for three nights straight, and all we've accomplished is to fill our shoes with snow.
Oh, I'm sorry, Margot.
Now, Hawkshaw, you know you're not a bit sorry.
Well, I just didn't want to miss being around if that darn leopard should strike again.
Well, do you think that we might be the victim?
Could be.
What?
Oh, don't be alarmed. I have a gun here with me. Besides, I'm afraid this weather is a little too cold for a tropical beast.
Yes, but maybe we get... What was that?
Come on, Margot.
Stop!
Through these bushes here, Margot.
All right.
Wall that stands in heaven.
Now, what happened? What's going on here?
Look. Look, the leopard. The leopard has struck again.
Oh, Lamont, look at that body.
Margot, stand over there, please.
He's beyond help. He's dead.
Yes. Who is the victim, do you know?
A park derelict from his appearance.
Did you see the leopard?
Yes. Yes, I did.
Where were you when the screams were heard?
Where was I when I was walking my bit about 50 yards away. When I heard the scream, I come running.
And what happened then?
When I came near this clearing, I saw a large spotted animal standing over the body, tearing at it with its claws. Well, I was so surprised, I cried out.
And the animal heard you?
Yes. He turned quickly and snarled and leaped into the bushes.
I see. And that's when you fired at him?
Yes. I was quite a distance away, but I think that one of my shots must have winged him.
I'll have another look at this body.
He did a job on him, didn't he?
It was a leopard, all right. That's their method of killing.
Yes, the same dirty beast that got my pal, Mac.
And there's something wrong here. Something missing. Can't quite place what it is.
I'm going now to send out an alarm.
All right.
I'll be right back.
Well, Lamont, what do you make of it?
I don't know, Margot. When I was hunting one time in Africa, one of our native boys was killed by a leopard. The body, when we found it, looked exactly as this one does.
Then there is a wild leopard at large.
I'm not sure. While this killing tonight has brought back that whole episode in Africa, there's something missing here.
Well, Lamont, all I can say is it's a good thing I'm not an old-fashioned girl.
What do you mean?
After this little episode, I'd certainly need some smelling salts.
Some smell...
Margot, that's it.
What?
That's it.
What, Lamont?
That's what's been missing. The smell. The unmistakable smell of the leopard.
Is the killer really a leopard? That's an important question. But there's no question about this. It's easy to keep your home cozy and comfortable morning, noon, and night with Blue Coal. And here's why. Blue Coal is America's finest hard coal, carefully prepared for convenient home heating. You can depend upon Blue Coal for quick heat on cold mornings, steady, healthful warmth all day long, and a slow, long-lasting fire when you bank it for the night. No wonder thousands of people are heating their homes this easy Blue Coal way. What's more, with each order of Blue Coal, you enjoy the full benefit of your friendly Blue Coal dealer's extra home heating service. He'll gladly send a trained serviceman to give your home heating plant a thorough inspection and help solve any heating problems you have. This extra service is yours for the asking. Yes, you definitely get more for your money when you place your order with a Blue Coal dealer. So next time you order fuel, ask for Blue Coal. Your neighborhood dealer's name is listed in the Where to Buy It section of the classified telephone directory under the words Blue Coal. And now, back to Lamont and Margot.
Dragging me now, Lamont.
To the zoo, Margot. The commissioner should be there by now.
Are you going to tell him about your discovery?
You mean the fact that there was no smell of leopard at the scene of the crime?
Yes.
I should say not. Can't you imagine what his reaction would be to that?
Yes, I suppose it'd be a big joke to him.
Yes, certainly. Oh, the squad cars are arriving now. That's the zoo just ahead.
Say, Lamont, you're not forgetting that Commissioner Weston is still angry at both of us.
Oh, he gets over those things very quickly, Margot.
Wait a minute.
Oh.
Where are you going?
Oh, we are friends of the commissioner, officer.
Oh, okay. If you're looking for him, he's in the big animal house.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Come on, Martha.
All right. Say, Lamont, just how important is the fact that there wasn't any smell of leopard near the body?
It can be most important, Margo.
Well, how do you mean?
Well, I can't tell you that yet. In here, Margo.
Well, I don't
know. Oh, look, they're all over there by that cage.
Good evening, Commissioner.
Oh, it's you, Cranston. What are you doing here?
Well, Margo and I happened to be in the park when the last victim was killed.
Oh, yes, I remember them, Commissioner. They stood by the body while I phoned in the alarm, sir.
Well, my amateur friend, you're a little too late this time.
What do you mean?
Crime has been solved.
Really? Well, who is the murderer?
There he is, right in that cage. A leopard that belongs in the zoo.
No, no, you're wrong.
Quiet, Oliver.
Lamont, that animal is dead.
Yes, killed by one of the bullets from Officer Kelly's gun.
You mean one of the shots you fired in the park, officer?
Yes, sir. I got one of them all right.
And he crawled back to his cage and died, is that it?
That's it.
It's not true. Rebo didn't do
it. Oliver, your friendly leopard did do it, and that's that.
Were you on duty here in the zoo when the animal got out, Oliver?
No, no, I always eat my late dinner at this time, but I wasn't gone long, and she couldn't have got out of this house.
She got out all right.
May I examine the beast, Commissioner?
My compliments, Cranston.
Thank you.
Kelly, make out your report. I'm calling this case officially closed.
Yes, sir.
Calling the squad that's combing the park. We're finished here.
Yes, sir.
I wouldn't be too sure of that, Commissioner.
Huh? What's that?
I say I wouldn't call this case officially closed yet.
Why not?
Just come here a minute, will you, please?
What is it? What is it?
Officer Kelly killed this leopard, right?
Yes, Kelly killed him.
Would you say that Officer Kelly was a knife thrower by any chance?
Knife thrower?
Yes.
Of course he's not a knife thrower.
Oh, that's strange, because this animal died from a stab wound in the heart.
Well, Lamont, you certainly spoiled the commissioner's case.
Yes, I'm afraid I did.
What to do now?
Hmm?
I say, what's the next angle on this thing?
Oh, well, we'll have to wait until the police clear out of the zoo.
Then what?
Then the two gentlemen in charge of the animals are going to receive another visit from the Shadow.
Oh, Rebo, poor Rebo. They tried to put the blame on you, didn't they, girl? Tried to say you killed all those people.
Mr. Oliver. Mr. Oliver.
Oh, it's the Shadow again.
That's right.
What do you want? Why are you here?
Don't you remember my telling you that if another murder occurred, I would return?
Yes, I do.
Where is your friend Harper?
I don't know.
Isn't he supposed to be on duty tonight?
Yes, he is.
Then why isn't he here?
I don't know, I tell you. I haven't seen him since early in the evening. Before Rebo was killed.
You don't like Mr. Harper, do you?
Why do you say that?
It's true, isn't it?
What difference does that make?
Do you know who killed that animal? Do you?
Why do you keep asking me all these questions?
Because I want to find out all I can about Harper. He killed your leopard. I know he did. And you know it, too.
Yeah.
But you're afraid to say so because he has some hold on you. Something that he knows will keep you from talking.
Oh, yeah?
Sure, you're afraid of him, Oliver. Afraid.
That's not true. I'm not afraid of him. Even though he has got something on me, that doesn't stop me from talking.
Especially since he killed Rebo, eh?
Okay, I'll tell about him. I'll tell plenty.
Good. Where is he now?
Well, I'm not sure. He's probably downtown, down where he always goes, to the big house on Columbus Square.
What's down there in that house?
That's where they meet, all of them meet.
Who meet?
The whole cult.
Cult? You mean that...
I mean that Harper is the leader of a crazy cult.
Oliver. Oliver.
Didn't get a chance to...
Yes?
To tell you, the cult is...
He's dead.
You cruise around the square again, Mr. Cranston, hey?
Yes, Shrevey. Once more, if you please.
You think we ought to get out and ring doorbells, Lamont?
No, we'll never learn anything doing that.
Hey, you know, going around and around the square like this is fun. It's sort of like a merry-go-round. Hey, do you indulge much in merry-go-rounds, Mr. Cranston, hey?
I haven't lately, Shrevey.
It's a nice, clean sport. You know, I remember one time I'm riding on a big one. It's down on the island, and...
Lamont!
What is it?
Shrevey, stop the cabin.
Oh, sure.
Lamont, that house on the corner. two men and a girl just went up the stairs, and she seemed to be ill. They were holding her up between them.
Yes, and what happened to them? Well,
I may still be upset from that killing in the park, but I could have sworn that when the door opened, they were greeted by what appeared to be a big leopard reared up on his hind legs.
What?
I'm quite sure, Lamont.
Then that's the place we're looking for. It's the headquarters of the cult that Oliver spoke of just before he died.
What kind of a cult?
A cult of leopard women and men. I've heard much about these things, but I never thought they were in this country.
Oh, that's incredible.
Margot, go get the police. Have them outside the house as soon as possible.
But what about the girl? The girl they were bringing in that house?
She's probably their next victim. Go, Margot. Go at once.
As we are all gathered, the ceremony will begin. To you, O leopard, most lovely of beasts, we bow down in humble reverence. Your beauty of form we greatly admire. Your courage and cunning is our courage and cunning. As you are, so we will try to be. As you so majestically stalk through the jungle, so we too will stalk through the streets of this city. Our deeds are deeds that are done for you.
Priestess! High priestess?
Yes, O worshipper?
The offering, the sacrifice is ready.
There is time yet. There is time.
No. No, we must do it now.
Oh, you are too eager. We are not really going to kill this beautiful girl.
Why do we not kill her?
Why? Because we are not murderers. We worship beauty, not death.
Death is the beauty supreme.
You do not know what you are saying.
The cult of the leopard is death. It has always been death.
Worshipper, you are behaving most strangely tonight.
Why did we bring the victim here, if not to kill?
Enough of that talk. There is no need. Your arm. What is wrong with your arm?
Oh, that is just...
How did you hurt it? Answer me. How did you hurt your arm?
I'll tell you how he hurt it.
Who speaks?
It is I, the Shadow.
Shadow?
Quiet. Quiet. Where are you? I cannot see you.
I am standing right beside you, here, in the shadows. Your friend, Mr. Harper, can explain how I make myself invisible.
Do you know this voice? Did you bring him here?
No.
No, he didn't bring me here, madam. I came here seeking him.
What do you mean?
I said that I'd reveal how you hurt your arm, Mr. Harper.
How did he do it?
He was shot. Shot by a policeman who discovered him in the act of committing murder.
That's not true.
What are you saying?
This man, this member of your cult, disguised as a leopard, has already claimed two victims.
No.
Killing them as a leopard kills, by slashing their throats with razor-sharp claws.
Is this true, Harper?
No, of course not. He's lying.
I suppose that you denied, too, that you shot and killed your fellow keeper in the zoo, just as he was about to tell me all about you.
Of course I deny it.
Then how do you account for that wound in your arm?
Yes. Yes, Harper. Explain that.
Why should I have to explain? What are you trying to do to me?
I already know what I'm going to do to you. I'm going to turn you over to the police.
Oh, no. No, you're not.
Let him, Harper. Then you can prove you're innocent.
You keep out of this.
He's afraid. Afraid that he'll be found out.
I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid of anything.
Harper, what is wrong with you?
Do you think that any of you can trap me? That you can match my cunning or courage? The cunning and courage of a leopard?
Harper, do not talk that way.
What if I did kill? It's a leopard's right to kill. Wantonly, joyously, just for the love of killing.
Be quiet, Harper.
You can't silence me, and you can't trap me either. I'll fight. I'll claw, I'll kill. Do you hear me? Kill! Kill!
Look out for him. Stand back! Harper!
Oh. Oh, you have killed him.
That's right, madam. And now you and your cult are going to have to explain your existence to the police.
Margo. Weston has rounded up all the members of the cult, so I guess our work is done.
Well, Lamont, what I don't understand is how a cult like that was formed. What was the purpose of it?
Well, cults of leopard men had their origin in Africa. They're still active there. Their ritual is a form of pagan worship. This group that we encountered tonight were obvious fanatics who'd learned the secrets of the African ceremony and were practicing them here.
Hmm. Nice people, these fanatics. I wonder if you'd mind taking me home, Lamont.
Why go home?
Because I want to dig into my closet and burn my leopard skin coat.
Kids, that is scary, isn't it, huh? That shadow is something else, isn't he, huh? But you gotta hand it to him. He sure knows how to spot a leopard, huh? Yes, yes. He knew it was one of the zookeepers because they fought like cats and dogs, huh? Now, all he had to do was figure out which was which. A game of what you could call cat and mouse, huh? Really, and it wasn't easy. That hopper had a mind like a razor with matching claws, huh? I mean, a strep throat is bad enough, but rip throat? Now really, huh? That's what they said. Huh. I guess that hopper just wanted a little help trying to claw his way to the top, huh? Probably why he became a zookeeper in the first place. He wanted to be the king of beasts, huh? Oh, really? Now, why he killed Rabu is a bit more of a mystery. Perhaps he liked acting like a fake leopard so much that when the real one came along, he couldn't resist taking a stab at it, huh? Oh, really? But that's where he goofed, because he should not have tried to commit the perfect crime, huh? Now that shadow made certain that he permanently kept his paws to himself, huh? Yes, he ended all 9 lives with one shot from his 6-shooter. With skill like that, I hope he mounted Hopper's head, huh? Oh, and speaking of mounting, our next feature has mounting horror. It's the weird circle and the heart of Ethan Brand. So scary!
Out of the past, phantoms of a world gone by speak again the immortal tale, The Heart of Ethan Brand.
Ethan, what are you doing here? What do you want?
I've come to share a joke, Brother Barton. A wonderful, colossal joke. No man enjoys laughing alone, you know.
Come in, Ethan. Oh, I don't fancy myself laughing at your jokes. Sit a few minutes. I have a new fireman coming to keep the kill going tonight. I'll have to go out directly and get him started.
Don't fidget, Brother Barton. You've a lifetime to tend the fires of the lime kiln, while I... My good Brother Barton, I have quite a tale to tell you. In fact, you can't relish the joke until you've heard the strange story of my wickedness.
You haven't changed, have you, Ethan?
Oh, yes. Much for the worse. I've learned to manipulate men as a chess player would move his pawns. I've made men commit crimes they had never dreamed of. And I've enjoyed every moment of my evil life.
Oh, you're still as crazy as ever. What are you talking about?
You'll understand when you hear my story. And by the way, Barton, I haven't been able to finish my search. I haven't yet found the unpardonable sin.
You're talking in riddles, Ethan. Now, I'm a plain man. Talk to me simply.
Don't tell me you've forgotten. Forgotten our long talks as we used to watch the fires of the lime kiln together.
I'm not likely to forget working side by side with you. I don't recall all you've had to say, though. You talk wild and crazy most of the time. Sometimes when you stood poking the fires in the kiln and the sparks flew round and the red glare lit up that cynical smile you always wore, you looked like the devil himself.
It was at just such a time, brother, when my face still glowed from the heat of the lime kiln, that we began to talk of the unpardonable sin. Think back, Barton. Think back to a certain day when we stood together on the side of Mount Greylock firing the furnace.
Stand back, Ethan, while I stow in this log.
We don't need it. Fire's going good enough now.
All right, then. Open the door.
I like to watch a blazing fire. I guess it's about the only excitement I get. What a life.
Why don't you go to the city, Ethan? Get some kind of job there.
I don't want some kind of job. I don't want to work just for the sake of working and making money. I'm not made like that.
Sometimes I think, brother, you're not made like anybody else in this world.
You flatter me, Barton. But there is no doubt that I'm unique. Yes, the only thing that would drive me to labor industriously would be some unusual, interesting motive.
A wicked motive, if I know you. I'll bet my life on it. Before you die, Ethan, you're going to commit some kind of unpardonable sin.
Unpardonable sin? Now, what does that mean? Unpardonable sin. We don't all yield the same temptations. Our weaknesses are all different. Our sins are different. And which sin is unpardonable?
I guess I don't rightly know, but the way I look at it, a man's weakness can lead him to sin and maybe to an unpardonable sin. Now, take Willie Sheridan coming along there riding up. Horses are his folly. Maybe they could lead him to commit his unpardonable sin. Well, he ought to be tending to his paper mill, but instead, here he comes in the middle of the day horseback riding.
Hiya, boys! Fine day!
Sure is, Willie.
Good hunting, Willie! Barton, you've inspired me. You've given me a reason for living. I'm going out in search of the unpardonable sin.
By Hickory, I almost think you mean it. You got the same kind of expression you used to have when we were kids, and you'd pull wings off of flies just to watch them wriggle.
A minor experiment, Barton. But now I shall embark on a master plan, on a large-scale experiment in sin. Find out a man's weakness, and you can control his life, and perhaps make him commit the unpardonable sin. It should make a lifetime of interesting research.
No doubt, Ethan. No doubt. Say, look. Look over there in the valley. Must be a big fire. There's a lot of smoke.
Yes, looks like it. Isn't that Willie Sheridan's place?
Yeah, it's just about where it is, all right. Say, if there's a fire in his stables, Willie will be fit to be tied.
Well, Willie was on his way home just now. I think I'll run over and see the excitement. I always did like a fire. Surely you haven't forgotten that day, Brother Barton. The day Willie's stables burned down. When I arrived, Willie was running around frantically, not accomplishing very much. Some of his horses were trapped, and there was nothing anybody could do about it. As I watched Willie's mounting hysteria, I suddenly decided I had meant what I had said about the unpardonable sin. And I realized I could go about my research in a cold-blooded way. Willie would be my first experiment. He had, as we all know, a bad temper. And his fights with Tom, his groom, were known around the whole countryside. So I went up to Will and I said, Willie, you know how the fire started?
No, no, no. I'd give anything in the world to find out. It must have been somebody's confounded carelessness.
Or revenge, maybe?
What? Revenge? What do you mean? Speak up, man.
You must know Tom hates you. Everybody heard him say he'd get even someday.
Oh, I see it now. Yes, it all adds up. I had a quarrel with Tom just before I took out the new filly.
Look. Look at Tom leaning against the fence.
Yes.
That satisfied smile on his face. He's got his revenge, all right.
Why, that dirty up. I'll fix him. I'll kill him. What I'll do, I'll tell him.
Now, don't lose your head, Willie.
Hey, what's the matter, Willie?
Somebody stop him.
He's got a pitchfork.
Too bad, wasn't it, Barton, that Willie had such a bad temper and loved his horses so much. Those weaknesses led him to murder. As I stood looking at Tom's body, I wondered, was murder the unpardonable sin? But I knew that though the law would punish him, most people would find it in their hearts to forgive Willie. I would have to look further for that unpardonable sin. As I walked away from the fire and the crime and past the burning stables, I suddenly felt that I was two persons. All not good and bad, as the moralists believe. But I felt I was two bad persons in one body. I know it sounds fantastic to your matter-of-fact mind, but to me it was clear. One of my selves was inexperienced in evil. But I knew I had an older self, a second soul as aged as the world, and great in the knowledge of men and wickedness. And as I walked down the road in the evening shadows, my second soul spoke to me.
Ethan Brand, you're a rare bird. You're cold, calculating, completely without heart. We ought to go far. And if you listen to me, I'll set you on top of the world.
That might be interesting. How do we begin?
First, you must have money. Not too much to start with. It would look suspicious. Ethan, your old friend Esther will help you.
Esther? Esther's only a clerk in a bank.
That's what I was thinking. Remember, Ethan, find a person's weakness, and you can control his life. Ethan, you are Esther's weakness. Go to Esther and say...
I'm not going to see you anymore, Esther. I want to give you a chance to forget me.
Oh, Ethan, I can never do that. Goodness knows I wish I could, but I just can't get you out of my mind and my heart.
I guess I've never really explained myself. You see, I'm not the type to be satisfied with a little cottage with a white fence all around and a clothesline in the backyard. I want the best, and I want my wife to have the best. If I had a future and money, I'd ask you to marry me tomorrow, Esther.
Ethan, you've never said that before. You've never mentioned marriage.
I've never had the right.
Oh, Ethan...
And now, ironically, the chance of a lifetime has come to me. I have an opportunity to buy a share in a good business. All I need is small capital. But, of course, I can't even think about it.
Well, there must be some way to get the money. How much do you need, Ethan?
$10,000. Of course, I'd only need it for a short time. Once I had an interest in the business, I could borrow money and pay back the $10,000 in a few months.
Yes, yes, of course you could. Ethan, let me help. You know... Mother left me quite a little income.
No, I didn't know that. But you don't think I'd take money from you? From a woman?
I'm not any woman. I'm the woman you're going to marry. Please, Ethan. Please let me help you.
All right, Esther. But I wouldn't take help from any other woman in the world. You see, brother, how easy it was to get people to do what you want. It was like playing a fascinating, mischievous game. That night, as I walked home from Esther's in the moonlight, my second self spoke again.
You handled that nicely, Ethan. Esther will have that money just when you need it. It'll just take a little time to arrange matters.
And what do I do now?
Ethan, call on Willie's poor, bewildered, beautiful sister, Grace Sheridan... Offer your sympathy over the recent tragedy. Grace can be a big help to us, Ethan.
Yes. Yes, that's a brilliant suggestion. I'll see that my talk with Grace Sheridan is highly satisfactory, and that the results are according to plan.
Awfully nice of you to come and see me, Ethan. I'm just so confused... Willie was so crazy about the horses, he neglected the mill, I'm afraid. Tell you the truth, I'm going to be lucky if I don't have to go into bankruptcy.
Grace, let me help you.
What?
I'd like to put some money into the mill, manage it for you.
Oh.
You see, paper interests me. Paper's used for 1,000 purposes. It's used all over the world. I'd turn your paper mill into a big business.
Well, you sound like a miracle, Ethan. Do you really mean this?
With all my heart.
Well, how much money can you put into the mill?
About $10,000.
That's fair enough. Then it's settled.
Fine. Here's to my very charming senior partner.
It's funny, Ethan, that we haven't seen much of each other in these years. Where have you been all the time?
Just waiting. Waiting for this day and this moment. And we're going to see a lot of each other from now on, Grace. Everything happened, Barton, just as I had planned. Esther brought me the $10,000. I bought the interest in the mill. And soon the long-neglected business was going along far better than we had dreamed. I became a leading citizen. Then one night, as I was turning out the light to go to bed, I heard the voice of my second self.
Ethan, it's time you made some political connections. For you and I are going farther than this small town and this state.
Yes, I've been thinking about that.
Your man, of course, is Jake Sampson. You must make him indebted to you. You've heard the gossip about Sampson, haven't you, Ethan?
Yes, everybody talks about it. Jake's a big man. The political boss in this state, and he could go far if it weren't for a woman. The woman he can't get rid of.
Jake will be at the Chateau, the gambling casino outside town tomorrow night. And you must make a friend, a loyal, grateful friend, out of Jake Sampson at any cost, Ethan. At any cost.
What better place, Barton, to study men than at the tables of chance? Perhaps there, I thought, I would find the unpardonable sin. So, the next night, I went over to the Chateau, and I finally found Jake Sampson brooding over a glass of brandy.
Hello, Ethan Brand. Join me. Help me drown my sorrow.
You certainly do look despondent, Sampson. What's the trouble?
I'm putty. Just putty.
You mean putty in a woman's hands?
You're a mind reader, Ethan. Then I guess everybody knows my personal affairs. I can be as hard as nails about everything else in the world except...
A woman. It's the old story, isn't it? You've ceased to care and the woman's still wrapped up in you.
Yes. She's not come along with me, if you know what I mean. I've gone up and Babette has stayed just the same. I tried to explain it to her again tonight, but it's no use. I'm a man doomed to the woman he doesn't want.
You ought to let me take over. I use direct, hard methods.
She's right over there, Ethan. That little blonde in a red dress at the roulette table.
I see her. Well, Sampson, maybe I can do you a favor.
I'd never forget it, Ethan Brand. I'll never forget it.
You're not having much luck tonight, are you, Babette?
This night or any other night. Say, how do you know my name?
I asked somebody. I think you're very attractive.
Ah, save the sugar. But maybe you'll bring me luck. Mister, all I got left in the world is $50. What'll I do? Put it all on the black or just part of it?
I can't make such an important decision for you. But then, you see, I'm a gambler. I gamble all or nothing.
Yeah, me too. Here's $50. All on the black. Now, watch that old wheel.
Red! Red! I win! I win!
And I've lost everything. goodbye, mister. Hope you have better luck than I.
Just a minute, Babette.
I'm going for a walk.
Let me come along.
Why not? Say, the lake looks cold, don't it? Come on, let's walk down there.
All right.
Say, who'd you ask about me when you found out about my name?
Jake Sampson. I asked him if he minded if I tried to, cut in.
What'd he say? Was he mad?
No. No, not at all. He said that you and he had parted. Jake seemed glad that I was interested in you.
Well, he was he?
Yes. Yes, Jake was full of plans tonight. Of course, you know he's going to be married tomorrow. She's an awfully nice woman, and she'll be a big help to...
Wait a minute. Say that again. No. No, don't. I guess I've known something like this was coming. But Jake ought to have told me himself. You had no right.
Oh, I'm awfully sorry. Perhaps Jake just didn't have the courage to tell you.
Oh, go away, mister. Leave me alone. I want to walk by myself.
All right. You won't get lost down there by the lake. It's slippery on those wet rocks.
Thanks for telling me.
Well, goodbye, Babette. Goodbye.
Hurry, Ethan. Hurry. So you won't be caught near the lake. No one must see you running away from the drowning.
After Babette's suicide, Jake Sampson began to make great political plans for me. So, Barton, I had two things I needed for advancement. A growing business and political backing. Then one evening, Esther came to my house.
Ethan, I've got to have that money back quickly. You see, I stole it. I stole it from the bank. I took it in dribbles and fixed the book so they wouldn't find out. But in a few days, the accountants are coming, Ethan.
But, Esther, you told me it was money from your mother's estate.
Oh, I lied, Ethan. I lied. I wanted you to have the money. I thought we were going to be married.
We are going to be married, Esther, very soon now. And I'll get you that money by noon tomorrow.
Oh, Ethan, I knew you wouldn't let me down. I knew it. I've got to go now, dear. Goodbye, Ethan.
Goodbye, Esther.
Ethan, you must not marry Esther.
I've never for a moment seriously considered it.
Grace is the woman for you, Ethan.
I know that. Don't I know I'd get full ownership of the mill from Grace? Besides, she has the social connections I need.
You must get rid of Esther some safe way. She's the kind of woman who would be troublesome. The kind who would fight for you. Hang on to the end. You must get rid of Esther without hurting yourself.
Yes, but how? How?
Remember your rule, Ethan. Control people through their weaknesses. Now, Charles Townsend, the president of Esther's bank, loves power. Power over people. He likes to make people suffer. He acts quick and he has no mercy. Go to Townsend now, tonight, and say to him...
Mr. Townsend, I've come as a friend to do you a favor. But in return, I'll expect one from you.
Well, it depends upon what it is, Mr. Brand.
You must keep the source of the information I'll give you a secret. My name must be out of it.
Hmm. That's a reasonable request.
But should you just happen to forget, and just, of course, by accident, mention my name, I'm afraid I'd be forced to take my banking business elsewhere.
Why, really, Mr. Brand, now, what do you take me for? What's on your mind?
I just thought you might like to know one of your clerks has stolen $10,000.
What? Who? Which one is it?
Esther. I'd advise you to get to the bank early in the morning, Mr. Townsend, and check the books. Check the books early. Well, Brother Barton, that brings us up to date. I should be sitting very pretty indeed. Esther is out of my way in the state penitentiary. I'm engaged to Grace Sheridan. I shall be owner of a prosperous mill. And Jake Sampson has great political plans for me. Yes, Barton. I'm on my way to that coveted place on top of the world.
You're mad, Ethan. Stark mad. You and your second self.
Get out of my house.
But wait, brother. You haven't heard the end. You haven't shared my joke. I'm on my way to the top. But I'm never going to get there. I came here from Dr. Myers. I haven't been feeling very well lately. I made him tell me the truth. I've but a few months to live. I'll never realize any of the glory ahead for me. Isn't it a joke, brother? A colossal joke.
What are you made of, Ethan? You don't even care about yourself, do you? Doesn't seem to mean anything that you're going to die.
Not a thing. I don't know why I haven't any feeling, any emotion, Barton. But there it is. I haven't. Well, I've had quite a career, haven't I, brother? And to think it all started over a search. A search for the unpardonable sin. Which I never did find.
Ethan, you caused a girl to steal, drove a woman to suicide, and egged down a man to murder. You found the unpardonable sin, Ethan. You've committed it by deliberately leading people into temptation. The unpardonable sin, Ethan, is in your own breast. Now, please get out. I can't stand the sight of you any longer.
All right, Barton, if that's the way you feel. I think I'll go up on the side of Mount Greylock and have a last look on the scenes of my boyhood. See our rustic lime kiln once more.
Then I shan't be going there. My new fireman knows his business anyway. I don't want to see you again, Ethan.
But perhaps, brother, perhaps you shall.
Didn't turn out, Ethan, as we planned, did it?
No, but I've decided what I must do.
Yes. Yes, it's the best way. Come. Come ahead.
Joe! Joe, wake up! You're a fine fireman asleep on the job. Wake up!
Oh, it is a bad head I have. Your brother Ethan, he socked me in the jaw, he did.
Ah, the blasted fool.
Your brother wanted to stir the fires in the kiln, but I wouldn't let him. The fires was just right. I didn't want no interference. So he socked me, he did. I guess I've been out for some time.
And look at that. The idiot left the furnace door open. Now wait till the fires are out. Joe!
What's the matter now?
Come here. Look inside the furnace. Oh,
the saints preserve us. A skeleton. A white skeleton of a man lying there on the red hot coals.
And here outside the door on the ground is the man's hat.
Maybe it's your brother.
Yes, it belonged to Ethan Brand.
He must have been a madman for sure.
Joe, hand me those prongs.
Yes. Here they are. What are you finding now?
There on the skeleton is a hard object. There's a lump on the breast.
Ah, so there is. Why, it's the shape of a human heart.
Here, look at it. It's marble. It's a marble heart.
Kids, that was the scariest, wasn't it, huh? The heart of Ethan Brand. Now, I've heard of hearts of stone, but this guy took it too far, huh? Really. I mean, you could even say he lost his life and his marble at the same time, huh? but at least he doesn't have to worry about being called frigid. And how, huh? Oh, really? I wonder what his girlfriend thought when she heard what had happened to her old flame, huh? Oh, she probably hoped he was still burning with desire, huh? After all, she lost her job and went to jail because of him. It's only fair he got fired, too, huh? That's what he said. Yes, Ethan wanted his life to end with a blast, so he went out in a blast furnace, huh? I wonder how he felt seeing all his plans going up in smoke, huh? Really? I bet he was so mad, it probably made his blood boil, huh? In fact, it wouldn't surprise me now if he was still fuming, huh? Well, I hate to have to end this heated discussion, but it's time now for Escape with Vincent Price in Bloodbath. So scary!
Tired of the everyday routine? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all? We offer you Escape! Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure. Escape, brought to you by your Richfield Gasoline Dealer and the Richfield Oil Corporation of New York. Marketers of Richfield Gasoline with Xylene, Richfield All-Weather Motor Oil, and other famous petroleum products. Look for the Richfield Eagle on the cream and blue top. Tonight, the escape to the jungles of South America, and a soothing tale of terror and violence, as told by James Poe in Bloodbath, starring Mr. Vincent Price. In the rapids and walking the mules in the shallower stretches, we've managed to get our supplies and equipment more than 1,700 miles up the river. After this, further navigable passage being impossible, we've traveled by foot, hacking our way through the thick, steaming jungle, coaxing and goading the heavily laden beast. We've left the jungle and begun the climb. 11 days later, high in the Andes, we found our objective. We set to work, hard work. And then, on a hazy afternoon in late May, we found. Never forget it. Below us, the mountains swung down to the jungle which stretched eastward, far as the eye could see. The peaks above us had cut off the setting sun, and the light had a curious, violet quality. The dank, chill wind whispering and dusting set the sharp timber shrubs to trembling and shuddering, and the mules, disdainful of their five strange masters, foraged the cacti and dwarf pine. The instruments were set up and the specimens were at hand, and now, crouched and tense, they leaned forth. I got it, Miss Jake. Until you get it, Yama. Come on, come on. Wait for you. I've waited 5 years for this moment. 500, you mean? 5 million? Come on, Hippie. How about it, Hick? Mm-hmm. Hey, sir, give me a sample, O'Brien. Yeah, here. Yeah. Come on, baby. You got it for you. Here, Dave. Sit down. Holy cow. Good. Good. It's fantastic. Fantastic. Yeah, yeah. Come on, Hattie. Not the one. Yeah, Hattie. Good. Gentlemen. Gentlemen. Unless this machine is busted, unless this has forgotten its multiplication table, we have discovered the richest lode of uranium ore known to man. I won't go into the details of how we've come to locate the ore, because that's a story in itself. Suffice it to say that late in the afternoon of that hazy May day, the five of us, gamblers all, came to the end of our rainbow. Find our pot of gold. The vein runs all the way up the side of the mountain. Must be worth $1 million bucks. $1 million, a billion, $1 trillion bucks. Do you boys realize that we've got the air?
Sure we do.
We've got the world at our feet. By the man who gets the stripe registered in his name can be a king. Every country in the world is going to come running up to him with trunks full of money and power.
Ah, you tell him, Hefty.
Power? Yeah, we'll make the United States the most powerful nation on earth. Why, the United States. You wouldn't sell to anybody else, would you? I'm a businessman, huh? You're a fool. No, no. I'm a businessman. Oh, Jim, we've got the world at our feet. Split five ways. The world at our feet. Split five ways. That night, as I lay huddled under my thin blanket, I wondered what it would be like being a wealthy man. Wondered if it were really true. Wondered how it would affect the others, how it would affect me. In the morning, we were to set off on the long return journey down to the jungle and through the jungle to the launch and down the river to civilization. There we'd register our claim, purchase, if need be, the land, lease it perhaps from the government. Hey, millionaire, world at our feet. Uranium, got to blow up the whole universe. Oh. Wake up, man. Wake up. Oh, good morning, millionaire.
Wake up.
Sun's coming out. Huh? Where are the others?
They're gone.
Gone? Yes, they might have been blind. They took the mules and most of the food and cut out.
When? How do I know when? Sometime during the night.
But why? A $1 trillion, that's why.
No.
Once they get down to the jungle, they'll have to travel on foot. The 10 days march to the river. If they beat us to the boat, we're stuck with 1,500 miles of jungle between us and safety.
50? Impossible. We'd never make 100.
That's right. They've got to catch him, or we're dead. We traveled as lightly as possible. It was a risky business, doubly so because O'Brien and Dumont had taken our guns with them. The only weapons we had between us were one long machete and two pocket knives. These would be of little protection against jaguars, bushmasters, tapirs, boa constrictors, and the rest of it. Fortunately, they'd left our number one necessity to survival. They'd forgotten to take our quinine. This and our food was all we carried. The long descent to the jungle was slow going on foot. It was here that we nearly gave up hope. We moved as fast as we could, but we were no match for men who were riding. But we reached the jungle. Then things took a better turn. Here the thick vines and heavy undergrowth was, we knew, almost an impossible hazard for a riding man. And we could see their boot prints mingled with those of the mules. We knew that they were having trouble, too. The animals were afraid of many things in the jungle. The walk suddenly required careful handling. We pushed ahead as rapidly as possible, battling mosquitoes, yume flies, matukas, and the blood-sucking carpaco ticks, and of course the jungle itself with its never-ending barrage of razor grasses, needle vines, swamps, bog traps, and so forth. It was hot, stinking hot, and the going was hard, but we had to make it. We couldn't travel at night. We'd taken our flashlights. We'd bundle up as best we could, protecting ourselves not from the cold, it was hot and muggy even at dawn, but from the mosquitoes. And as we progressed towards the river area, from the bat. Vampire bat. Ever seen them? They're small, rather fragile-looking little things. By day, they hang, heads down from the trees, wings folded like clusters of rotten fruit. By night, they hunt. They have razor sharp teeth, bite like the finest steel scalpels. Their object is to break the skin very delicately, start the blood to coming, and then they simply hang on and sit. Without mosquito netting, we had a rough time of it, a sleepless time. But we managed to keep on going. And on the third day...
No use, fellas. We can't make it to the river before them.
We've got to.
We've got to make it
right, Wayne.
And even if we do catch up, they got the gun. What? What is something?
Quiet. I heard something.
What did you hear?
Gunfire,
yeah.
Come on. It can't be more than a mile or two ahead. Come on. We ran through the jungle, following the fresh marks of the animals and the two men. And a half an hour or so later, we broke into a little clearing, and there was Dumas.
Dumas. His dad shot in the back. So he died, that old...
Come on. Let's turn him over.
Let him be sweating, huh? Yeah, it's malaria. See his face? My dear old Obi. When Dumont came down with malaria, probably started to slow him down.
Sweet guy. Come on. Come on, let's go.
Hey, they should have remembered the quinine.
I got no sympathy for Dumont.
You know what would be nice?
Yeah.
If that Obi should get malaria now.
Yeah.
He'd be helpless. He'd ask me for quinine. And I'd throw him a stone.
On we went. Now there were no boot marks with the mule tracks. Apparently O'Brien was riding one of the animals. From time to time we'd see a flurry of tracks turned up as though he had had to dismount to tug one of the beasts back onto the trail. We followed the tracks for another 2 days, and then on the sixth day, we found one of the mules.
How you feeling, boy? Huh? Where's your saddle?
He really looks big. Look at those marks in his flanks.
Vampire bat.
Yeah.
That means O'Brien on foot.
Yeah.
Hey, you hear that?
Yeah.
Where's the river? He's starting the motor. Come on.
There.
It wasn't very far, just a few hundred yards. And the path was strewn with O'Brien's discarded supplies. Quite suddenly, we came out of the jungle and onto a narrow white sandbar. The river. And there, not 30 feet away from us, just drifting off into the deep, dark, fast-moving waters, was O'Brien and the launch. O'Brien!
Me
here!
I see
Jack! Look at him. He's like a skeleton.
O'Brien!
The launch lurched dizzily as it floated downstream. O'Brien was feeble, sweating for death. He had the fever, had it bad.
Come on, let's collect
him. You can't. This is piranha water.
Cannibal fish.
They'll
eat
you. Yeah. Hey, Obi. Hey, you know me, Obi. You love Tallahassee. I know you say, Obi. Ha!
Ha!
He staggered dizzily about the cockpit trying to start the engine. He was laughing, and he was so weak that he could barely spin the flywheel to the kicker.
Obi! He's up!
Good Lord, he's in the water.
The fish, the piranhas.
Oh, they've got him. I ain't going to look at this.
One moment we saw him swimming weakly, his large, fever-ridden eyes turned imploringly toward us, and the next moment he was gone, leaving only a large, red, churning patch on the water. The piranhas are small, rarely more than 12 or 14 inches long, small fish with large, powerful jaws, teeth like broken glass, and an insatiable, maniacal appetite for flesh. The launch, caught by the deep, fast-moving waters, rocked softly this way and that and moved on downstream. Away. Away around a bend and out of sight.
The might of science over the years has produced better than ever gasoline for your car. But now science adds one of the greatest gasoline components of all. It's called xylene. Xylene, a super gasoline component, adds two great qualities to gasoline. Xylene gives higher than ever antinoc performance. Xylene means power. Today, every gallon of Richfield gasoline contains xylene. If you want a motor that runs quiet as a whisper, if you want pickup and power to spare, try Richfield gasoline with xylene. Your Richfield dealer offers a choice of two great Richfield gasolines with xylene. Richfield high octane at regular price for the average motor. Or Richfield Ethyl. Ethyl at its best for tip-top results in the highest compression motors. Drive in where you see the Richfield Eagle on the cream and blue pumps. Get Richfield gasoline with xylene.
xylene, one of the highest antinoch components in gasoline history. And now we return you to Escape, starring Vincent Price.
We picked over the supplies O'Brien had left on the shore. There wasn't much we wanted. Gun without ammunition, a few tins of food, a tent and some bedding, cooking equipment, a coil of rope. We loaded these things onto the mule and set off through the jungle, downstream along the river's course. 1,500 miles to civilization. We had it tough. The jungle was thick along the river's bank, and we made little progress. Not more than 5 miles that day, but the next day, we rounded a bend, keeping close to the shore, and there, about a quarter mile below us and nuzzling the opposite shore, grounded on the sand, lay the launch.
Looks shallow enough here.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, but what about the fish?
How deep does it look to you, Harris, with the deepest spot on me?
Oh, I don't know, maybe 2.5 feet, maybe 3.
Most of it's less than that. I got an idea.
Shoot.
We got to get across the launch, see? So here's what we do. We throw away everything. There'll be food and water in the launch, see?
Yeah.
Now, you see that little patch of sand in the middle of the river where the bar shows?
Yeah.
We go that way. That's bound to be the shallowest way, see?
How do we go?
On the mule, the three of us.
Ah, you're nuts.
This mule ain't in such bad condition it can't get the three of us across 70 feet of shallow water.
What do you say, Harris?
Why not? All right, I'll get aboard first. Come on. Get farther up, Whimsy. You're the lightest.
Yeah.
Harris, you get on next. Huh? Hang on to Whimsy. Here. Carry this coil of rope around your neck. We may need it. I've got the machete strapped to my back.
Hey, you set, Wayne?
Yeah.
Now hold tight to me, Hess.
Don't worry. If I go, you go too.
Yeah.
And if he goes, I go. So let's hang on, gents. Yeah. Let's really hang on.
As long as he's moving fast, he can't get at his legs. Isn't that right?
He's not showing anything to him but hoofs and hair.
Hold his head up, Weems. Don't let him look down.
You all set?
Yeah, all set.
All right, here we go. All right, get off. Come on, Hess. Come on, baby.
I felt the mule lurch when he stepped into the water. The sand was softer here than on the shore.
Sand, huh?
Ahead, not 40 feet away, lay the little spit of land. The mule refused to run, couldn't run, and before he'd taken 10 steps, I knew he was too weak to support the three of us. From every direction in the swirling water about us came small, shadowy, dark shapes.
Come on.
The piranhas.
Don't stop! Come on, baby. Keep moving, baby. Come on. Move along, baby.
He can't do it.
You gotta do it, baby. Come on. Swing over. What are those?
The piranhas were churning the water about us, and coming in from beyond them were 4 or 5 long, dark shapes, 6 and 7 feet long, thick and wriggling.
Eels, electric eels. They'll sting them. Get along to the back.
Get into the sandbar.
Faster, faster. Come on.
Made it.
It's true about electric eels. I can throw a jolt that'll kill a jaguar. They got jaws like a vice.
So, here we are, gentlemen, stuck. Just 30 feet of water between us and the shore. Get across it, and we can get to the launch and the civilization and all the rest.
Oh, the three of us are too much for that mule.
Only 30 feet.
Why, you could run it in seconds.
You see those little shadows around us in the water?
I see those little shadows around us. You don't have to draw pictures.
Hey.
Oh, here's another bright idea coming up.
As a matter of fact, yeah.
Yeah, hold on to your hat, Harris.
We got the coil of rope.
Yes.
The mule could carry one of us. That mule's not in such bad shape, you know.
Yes.
Tie the rope over his bridle. Then one of us pulls him over with him fast. You see, one rides, and then the other two pull him back.
Yeah.
And the next one gets on.
Yeah.
What do you say?
Oh, I can't stay here.
It's a natural.
Who goes first?
Me, on account I'm the lightest. I won't tire him so much.
How about it, Harris?
All right.
Well, get going then.
Okay.
Tie that rope to his bridle.
I'm doing it.
All right, give me the machete.
What do you want the machete for?
I want it, that's all. Give me.
Okay.
All right, here. Now you two get at the end of the spit. So it's when you pay out the line, you don't get it caught in his legs.
Well, you think of everything.
That's right, I'm a smart boy.
Ready with the line.
You sure it's tied fast to the bridle?
Yeah, I'm sure.
No funny business, Weems. All we gotta do is jerk this rope once while you're over that water and you're done for.
You're a sharp article.
Yeah, that's right.
But not sharp enough.
Hey,
Weems, you cut the rope!
Go on, sucker!
The rope, our only salvation, was cut. And now Weems, grinning and riding, was out into the stream, heading for the shore and safe. He went not 15 feet when one of the long, dark, wriggling shapes made for the mule and got his leg. The mule reared up on his hind legs, the eel clinging to his foot, pumping paralyzing shocks into him. Weems clutched his neck with one hand and slapped him on the flank with the flat of the machete with the other. The mule came down and more eels went for his legs. He began to lurch sideways. Weems swung the long steel blade in an arc, barely missing the mule's leg, and connected with one of the eels. Hair seemed to stand on end. His other arm released the mule's neck. The arm holding the blade was extended stiffly, still caught in the thick, muscular back of the electric eel. And then the mule reared again, and Weems fell back into the water. The mule, freed of Weems, made the shore and vanished into the jungle. We turned away. No man could watch what was happening to Weems and retain his sanity. And so, there we were. Hess and I on that sand spit which the river was slowly washing away. Night coming, vampire bats coming, and all about us, the electric eels and the little cannibal fish waiting. There was no moon. There were evil stars, red and yellow. There was a black sky, and against it, blacker shapes, the vampire bats. We waved our arms and kept them off, but again and again during that long and terrible night, they brushed against us, squealing and squeaking, trying to get us. Dark, evil, thirsting bats. A thousand years later came the dawn.
That water's taken a lot of sand away. This thing isn't much bigger than a card table. Look at them. Look at those fish. You think they had enough to eat yesterday? Listen, Harris. No matter what happens now, at least you and I have played it square, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Shake my hand, Harris.
All right.
Because I think I got an idea on how we can get out of here.
What?
Yeah. Look up there.
Yeah.
See that vine hanging down from the big tree?
It's over the water, and it must be 15 feet up.
Yeah. But if you were on it, you could do a tarzan to the shore.
The rope?
That's right. Now, if we can just lasso the end of that and pull tight, we'll have enough swing to make it across. Swing like a pendulum, if you follow me. One guy gets on the other's shoulders to swing over to get the start, see? Then when he gets to shore, he fastens a rock and swings the rope back to the other.
That vine will hold. It'll work. It took us 2 hours before we managed to lasso the end of that vine. And then we tested it again and again until we were positive it would hold a man's weight. And then we were ready.
Stand good and steady now, pal. I'm going to go easy on you, but don't shake. If you spill me in that water, I'm a gone guy.
I'm ready.
I'm ready. Good luck. Here.
No!
I felt his feet leave my shoulders, and then he was off, skimming the water with his feet drawn up, and then, miraculously, he was on the shore.
Goodbye! Goodbye!
Yeah.
Like a breeze, huh?
Like a breeze.
Hey, any rocks around there?
Sorry.
He smiled at me and shrugged and then looked down the stream at the launch. I knew that smile, that $1 trillion smile. It said, so long, sucker.
Don't do it, Hess. Send me the rope.
You're too nice a guy, Harris. You and I would never get along.
You can have it all, Hess. Every scrap of it. Only for the love of mercy, send me the rope.
No, you want some. You wouldn't approve of what I mean to do with it.
Hess! He stood there laughing at me and shaking his head slowly. But above him, just over his head, was another vine. Thick and mottled, and it was moving.
Look out, Hess! Hess! He didn't understand or didn't hear me. Just stood there smiling and shaking his head. The boa constrictor dropped heavily and accurately, a thrashing tangle of scaly muscles. Alone, all alone, except for the ever-waiting piranhas. Hess's body was hidden by the low, scrubby vines and palmettos. Several hours later, I saw the boa, now gorged, slither lumpily away. I waited, and I waited. From time to time, I thought of stepping out into the stream. It would be over very quickly, I told myself, very quickly. I couldn't. And then I noticed an odd thing. The current which had been sweeping the sand away had shifted slightly. A whim, a miracle. And now new sand from some sunken bar was beginning to pile up between me and the shore, grain by grain, rib by rib. I watched. And at 5 o'clock that afternoon, I walked ashore to the lock. And didn't even get my feet wet. It's nice where I live. Quiet little streets, nice people, nice kids, nice country, peaceful, nice peace. I know where there's enough uranium to blow it all to hell. Want it? Just go up the river. Up the river, it's for the taking. Ask Dumont and Obie and Weems and Hess. $1 trillion worth. Enough to give the whole world a bloodbath, yourself included.
Escape is produced and directed by William N. Robeson, and tonight starred Mr. Vincent Price. Bloodbath was written by James Poe. Others in the cast were Wally Mayer, Ted DeCorsia, Paul Fries, and Tony Barrett. Special music arranged and played by Ivan Dittmars. Goodbye, then, until this same time next week, when once again we offer you Escape.
Oh, kids, that was too scary, huh? Bloodbath. Like I knew uranium was deadly, but not that way, really, huh? Let me tell you, boy... I must admit, though, it was extra radioactive, though, huh? Yeah. Wow. Really, I've never seen so many people drop like flies because of mosquitoes, huh? Really. And you know, they were the lucky ones. Think what it must have been like facing all those piranhas with bated breath, huh? Really, though, I mean, when you took a bath in that river, they not only cleaned behind your ears, but right on through them, huh? Really? And the only reason they didn't have to worry about catching cold there was because they left you bone dry, huh? Wow. But I guess if nothing else, you would at least get a charge out of the electric eels, huh? Really, talk about a shocker. Between them and the piranhas, the only way to swim that river was doing the death stroke, huh? No wonder most of the natives there swim constantly. They're inside the fish bellies, huh? Wow. Of course, you could go over the river like Hess did until the snake foiled him, huh? You know, by the time that was happening, I had such a big lump in my throat, it reminded me of the boa constrictor, huh? Wow. You know, they went through all that and only to have the sandbar shift so one could walk across. Now, that's what I call turning the tides, huh? All because of greed, they wound up paying the ultimate price. Vincent Price, huh? Afraid so. Well, kids, I've got to fly. So until next week, same bat time, same bat station. This is a count warning you. If someone offers you a trip to the Amazon, ask for a rainforest check, huh?
No.